Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, our guest speaker is Diane Shea. She's been with Canando for a long time, and she'll be giving a way-seeking mind talk about how she came to practice. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to see everyone. In fact, I like looking up and seeing everyone at once. You're all kind of in your little squares, and I like that. Sometimes I think we're like little bees in our hives, or maybe we're monks in ourselves. But as Bonnie said, technology, Zoom. My sister once said to me when I was going through a difficult time, there's no such thing as a problem without a gift in it for you. This will surprise many of you working or studying from home and those who crave the closeness, activity, and noise of people close by. You probably hate Zoom. Zoom has been a gift for me during this strange and difficult time of the pandemic and our quarantine. You might say, what? Why? So Zoom has actually changed and challenged my practice. As Bonnie said, I've been sitting at Canando for many years. I would either be at College Avenue and then here at Canando every Wednesday evening and every Saturday. I once was Doan and part of the practice committee. I regularly attended our three-day sesshins. I sat often and would read a random chapter of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind at home every morning. All this while working full-time. In preparing this talk, I realized that somewhere along the way, my practice and understanding stopped growing. It got kind of stuck. Oh, I've continued to show up at Canando, but only on Saturdays. I have attended some sesshins and a few workshops, but I stopped coming on Wednesday evenings. I didn't even listen to the podcast of your talks. I also stopped my daily readings, as well as reading and discussing other books related to Zen, Buddhism, and our practice. I did remain committed to Canando. I was on the board for many years, and I still attend the monthly Sangha meetings. I managed the completion of the remodel of the Sangha house. But as facilities person, I have become a person doing, cleaning, organizing, arranging for repairs and upgrades and purchases. And while with the right attitude and mindfulness, all we do is our practice. But my practice has become one-sided. I have been acting in a rather detached utilitarian capacity that I have to admit is quite comfortable for me. Back to the gift, Zoom. Since we started our Zoom practice, I often sit with you, the Sangha, early in the morning. I now join you on Wednesday evenings and listen to the excellent talks and discussion. I'm really receiving the Dhamma once again. I'm meeting new people, seeing people I haven't seen in years, and connecting with friends from far away, like Janet in New Mexico, Teresa in Spain, and Giuseppe in Italy. I think about the triple treasure, the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. Somehow my treasure got buried. I was feeling like a robot going through the motions. In preparing this talk, I found the notes actually from the talk I gave many years ago. It was an awakening to see I could probably give that same talk tonight Does that mean I've regressed? Did my growth stop, get stuck? In that talk, I compared myself to that tiny drop of water falling from the top of the waterfall. It is, for many of us, one of our favorite stories from Suzuki Roshi. He describes his first visit to Yosemite. He watches the fall, tumbling more than 1,000 feet. He contemplates the journey of one tiny drop of water, alone, separate from the whole, from the river below. It's a beautiful metaphor for life's journey, how we are and always will be a part of the whole before we are born and after our death. Painfully, in life, we see ourselves as separate. Our egos placing us on top of the heap or buried beneath it, not one with it. I see so many of you deeply immersed in the practice, sitting daily, sewing rakusu and robes, studying, discussing so intelligently, sharing your practice, your knowledge. I've allowed my ego, my small mind, to hold myself a little separate. I have been clinging to the rocks again, high above the waterfall. I tiptoe around the pool, testing the water, dipping in my toe from time to time, always a little detached, separate, afraid to take the plunge. I told a Sangha member I would be giving a way-seeking mind talk tonight. She found this really humorous since I've been practicing here at Canada for so many years. Yes, it's true. I have been showing up here for a long time. But we are all always beginners. And for me, this is like a new beginning. So thank you for this opportunity to share the story of my journey here and back. San Francisco is where I grew up, in a stable, loving Italian Catholic family with its own unique and at the same time, same set of dysfunctions many of us share. My parents did not go often to church until my younger sister and I started Catholic school. But an all-seeing, ever-present, judging God the Father was always watching over us. I had one grandmother who was kind and loving. Grammy was the matriarch of the family. She was the oldest of three brothers and sisters. She was always cooking, baking, crocheting, sharing her love with the whole family. In contrast, my maternal grandmother was harsh and critical. And these traits were amplified when she had her evening cocktail. She visited our house often. Once when I was reprimanded for misbehaving, I ran through the house crying. I tripped and I fell. Nani said, "See, God punishes you when you're bad." I went into another room, climbed up on a chair, and gouged the eyes of a painting of the Sacred Heart hanging on the wall. I do believe my mother had a deep personal spiritual practice. I remember her kneeling quietly every night before she went to bed. I never heard her reciting any formal prayers or the rosary. But looking back, I believe she was practicing meditation. My 16 years of Catholic education was not all negative. In elementary school, I would often leave the noise and the competition of the schoolyard and go into the adjoining church. I would sit and breathe in the quiet coolness of the darkened church. I appreciated the light streaming in through the stained glass windows, the flickering flames of the burning candles, the fragrance of the flowers. I loved the Latin Mass and the Gregorian chants and the scent of incense during benediction. In my senior year in high school, I began to question my beliefs. I remember having a discussion with the priest teaching senior religion about the divinity of Christ. I told him, I just did not believe that Christ was God. Nonverbally, I was also asking, who is God? While I could accept the symbolism of the Trinity and other teachings, I did not accept them literally. The priest looked shocked. I thought, excommunication is looming. It was about that time I read the book Siddhartha. The story touched me and planted these seeds, which are, of course, much clearer now after years of practice. And they were, we may have many teachers, we may read many books, but ultimately, we leave that behind and must seek our own truth. On our journey, we may even meet the Buddha, but still, we go on seeking our own Buddha nature. Knowledge can be communicated, but wisdom cannot. And of course, that beautiful analogy of the flowing river has stayed with me all these years. So, back to the story of how I came to practice at Kanan Do. Soon after completing my education and starting a career practicing nursing, I married my high school boyfriend. After 23 years of marriage and two children, my husband and I separated. While the decision was mutual, it was devastating. But perhaps another problem with a gift in it for me. My husband was an alcoholic. He drank for only the first year of our marriage. After his recovery, he remained sober and active in AA. When he died 8 years after our separation, he had been in AA for 30 years. I had never gone to Al-Anon meetings. Why should I? Joe wasn't drinking. And I always kind of felt those kinds of meetings, even AA, were kind of hokey with all that God stuff and that higher power stuff. But after the marriage ended and I entered therapy and realized that there are two sides to the disease of alcoholism, I had the other side of the disease, often referred to as codependency. I started going to meetings, and there I met many people who are still my closest friends. Through these meetings, I began to face and know myself, grow up, become an adult. It happened that my therapist was a Dhamma teacher in the Korean Zen tradition. He suggested I read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Starting with the first few chapters, I followed Suzuki Roshi's instructions exactly and began to sit at home. After a few months, I signed up for a mountains and rivers workshop at Tassajara, led by Reb Anderson and Steve Harper. My first formal instruction was in the Zendo at Tassajara. For 5 days, we sat every morning, then hiked in the Santa Lucia Mountains, had tea and discussion in the afternoon, and sitting and Dhamma talks in the Zendo at night. I felt I had come home. I wanted to continue formal practice and wondered about driving all the way to Green Gulch. Reb told me that on Sundays, it was often like church on Sunday at Green Gulch, and suggested that I go to Kanan Do. He said, there's a teacher there, Les K, and it's much closer than Green Gulch would have been. I visited College Avenue shortly after that, and Kanan Do and our practice has been an important part of my life ever since. Reviewing my path here, giving this talk has been a stressful, gut-churning, and challenging experience, but again, another gift. I look back on my spiritual journey and I realize all my experiences have enriched and informed my practice. Today, I would call Christ a Buddha, an enlightened being, a teacher who had disciples, and preached love and compassion. I think the essence of his teachings is often lost in the institutional church. The philosophy of AA, the 12 steps and 12 traditions, have a lot in common with Buddhism, particularly with our Eightfold Path of right understanding, right thinking, speech, action, right effort, work, mindfulness, and meditation. In fact, the 11th step, practicing prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with a higher power, is often what brings people from these AA and Al-Anon meetings to our practice. The incense, the bowing, and chanting of our practice are as enriching to me today as my early experiences that I had as a child in church. In terms of my understanding now, most of the time I feel as if I don't have a clue. Recently, I and some Sangha members were talking on WhatsApp about the beautiful bell on the Ngawa and how when we visit these days, we love to ring it and appreciate its beautiful deep sound. One person said that once when sweeping the Ngawa, she bumped her head on that bell. She thought about stories of sudden enlightenment. She facetiously wondered, can bumping one's head on the bell bring sudden enlightenment? I said, slowly, slowly. She indicated that she preferred the route of a more sudden awakening. As I said, much of the time I really feel like I don't have a clue, but I do have moments of clarity. One may occur when we are chanting the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. It is bright just at midnight. It doesn't appear at dawn. Or just to depict it in literary form is to stain it with defilement. Or sometimes when we're chanting the harmony of difference and equality, hearing the words, understand the meaning, don't set up standards on your own. There are times when we're chanting and a particular phrase will spark in me a clarity and understanding. But if I pause, even for a millisecond, and try to grasp it with my thinking mind, the clarity is gone. It's like a camera that goes in and out of focus, or a little firefly that I caught blinking in the periphery of my vision, or a floater in my eye I try to focus on and bring to the center of my vision, but it keeps floating away. Sometimes sitting in the Zendo, facing the wall, eyes three quarters closed, particularly during a sesshin, I become aware of the patterns, the bumps and valleys in our plaster on the walls. The patterns change from dawn to dusk. Sometimes there are thousands of monks all sitting zazen. There are devils or elephants, a mountain range, the face of someone from my past. Am I hallucinating? Being entertained? Distracted? Am I running away from a pain in my ankle or neck, perhaps? Come back to your breathing, Diane. Then I am sitting here with all of you and every other sentient being and tiny particle that is or ever was. So I was originally going to talk about empathy and compassion. It's really an important topic for this strange and difficult period we and the whole world is experiencing. But I need that topic to percolate on the back burner for a while longer. Perhaps that it's a talk or a discussion for another evening. I feel a bit talked out. Now, I would very much like to hear your thoughts about your practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. So we are now open for any questions about Diane's Way-Seeking Mind Talk. If anyone would like, just come to Gassho or you can raise your hand. Brenda, was that you?
So, Brenda. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Brenda.
I'd like to say that you have been a model of practice to me for many, many years. And your steadiness and steadfastness and you know, never shirking from any difficulties and the construction. And I've often marveled, like, how does Diane do it? You know, she just pulls it out of a hat. You know, she finds these people and nothing stops her. So, thank you for your steadfast practice.
Yeah. Thank you, Brenda. I think you and I started about the same time when you were still a medical student, as I recall.
Nicholas, please. There you go.
Hey, Diane. I love your talk.
Thank you, Nick.
I'm outdoors. We're having a socially distanced faculty meeting in the San Jose Rose Garden.
Oh, uh-huh.
Anyways, something in particular that really resonated with me about your talk is that you mentioned how strong your practice was when you started. And then when you kind of, I guess, approached it from your own singular point of view, your practice suffered a little bit. But then when you really like gave into the community, you felt like your practice started flourishing again. And, that just really resonated with me because I remember when I started, sitting with my Sangha when I was 19 years old, I was really motivated just by my own self-interest, kind of like my own self-improvement, and having a teacher, you know, made the practice really strong. But after a while, my practice became really stagnant too.
Mm.
And I kind of just had this awakening on this one session. And I know we've chatted about it before because we're both clean freaks and cleaning is a big part of our Zen practices. I kind of just had this awakening that, you know, when I take care of the other members of my Sangha, when I participate with that third jewel of the three treasures, I practice like, really, really takes off. And that's something that really helped me kind of recommit and reignite my passion for the practice. And I guess just the one thing I just wanted to say is that you're one of the first people that I felt like a really close connection with when I started practicing at Canando. And I want to thank you for your practice too, and just thank you so much for being a member of the family Sangha, and I'm really grateful to you. Thank you,
Nick.
Teresa.
Hi, Diane.
Oh, hi, Teresa. So nice to see you at five in the morning.
Yes. I also want to thank you. I really appreciate your presence at Canando and your commitment and your talk tonight. And I wanted to ask you, you said that, you know, at one point you noticed that you kind of stopped reading or listening to the talks or coming to Canando so often, but you still remain very committed to Canando and all of us. And why do you think is that? And I wonder if you could also talk a little bit about the value of Sangha. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So my personality is I am an introvert. I live alone and I like living alone. And I think my role in my family, certainly in my married life, was the one who kept everything in order. I was always in charge, and Joe and the children could be having fun and doing all kinds of crazy things, but I always felt like I had to be in charge. I had to keep things under control. And I think my role at Canando kind of turned into that. I mean, sometimes I would be cleaning in the kitchen or the bathroom, and then it would be time for the 9:30 sitting, and I, for some reason, I wanted to stay and finish what I was doing. I don't know, and I just would listen to all of you sounding so articulate, so far in your practice, in my estimation, and I felt like it was really difficult for me to verbalize that. And so it was just easier. It was comfortable for me to be a person doing, a person functioning. It gave me an identity and a value. But my practice, my spiritual practice, suffered because of that. And as I said, it wasn't until I started again sitting on Wednesday nights, listening to the talks, and then occasionally I would come in the morning at 5:30 and sit and go to Starbucks, and that was really nice. But it's a ways to go, and I didn't do it often. And so I feel, it's really weird to feel closer to all of you now when we're physically distanced than I did before. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the reality of it.
I actually have a couple related questions, Diane. Mm-hmm. First of all, thank you for your talk and for sharing. It was a beautiful talk. You mentioned that you kind of tiptoe around the edges of practice and put your toes in it, but you don't take the plunge, as you put. So my first question is, what would it look like for you to take the plunge with your practice? And then the second question I have, which is related, is you mentioned the history of like codependency in relationship with an alcoholic. And an alcoholic or an addict is someone who has a lot of needs, who can't meet them by themselves, who not very well at managing themselves or responsible, right? So then the codependent role is preoccupied with meeting those needs and with taking care of the other person, right? So it's really then you're not as focused on yourself. It's like all of your focus has to go to someone else and supporting someone else. So I guess I was wondering if that pattern of being in the supportive role and not being in the role of focus, if that pattern has come up in your practice, and it comes back to then, well, what would it be like to have it be your practice and take the plunge?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Juani, for your question. That's true. The roles that you describe are very accurate of the codependent and the alcoholic. Joe was 30 years in AA. He really grew and developed as an individual through the program. And it's true that even when someone stops drinking, some of the self-destructive behavior can continue. And I was very young when I got married. I really didn't know how to be an equal partner, a kid. And so when Joe began to do some things that I didn't quite approve of, I really didn't know how to be an equal partner and communicate to him. I didn't know how we could come together and talk about what was going on. So I kind of just withdrew and became more controlling, which is what my pattern had always been. When things are chaotic and things are out of control, you become very controlling. And so I think that contributed to the end of the marriage. And then when I went to Al-Anon and I looked back, I realized that I probably grew up with a lot of people who were alcoholics around me. I mean, no one was ever falling down drunk or passing out in their soup every night. But when you have alcoholics in your family, they have one or two cocktails, and then pretty soon personalities change. And for a little child, that's really disturbing. It's very unstable to see someone you love not be the person you think they are, and really nastiness and unkindness can come out. And so I think some of my withdrawing and controlling probably started then. And of course, then I chose nursing as a profession, which is a profession where you're taking care of people. So that makes sense. But the plunge, what would it look like if I took the plunge? Well, here's the first step. I'm talking to all of you on a Wednesday night, something I'm terrified of. I always felt like, oh my gosh, they are so articulate. They have researched their talks. What have I got to share? So this was really challenging. For Les to have, well, Les has asked me before, and I've sometimes said, I can't, I don't know. But I said yes this time. I said yes. And so saying yes, it's part of it. And so part of taking a plunge, it's not jumping off a cliff and then diving 1,000 feet. It's, you know, getting in the water, getting your feet wet, saying yes. So anyway, I guess that would be what it would look like. This is what it looks like. And I hope that I can get unstuck. I like doing what I do. I like my role as facilities person, but I have to be aware that there is a balance, and I hope I can continue on that path. Thank you.
It's a good answer.
Good answer.
I'll take it.
I'll take it.
I'm doing an echo for some reason. All right, May.
Thank you. Thank you, Daya, for sharing. Yes, you're right. And then I seldom to listen to your talk. You know, you seem to keep yourself quite close. So this is almost like my first time to hear about your story. And then wow, so many years in this half an hour, and then I'm deeply grateful. And also, you mentioned that this talk is not about compassion, but I, for some reason, I just feel it. I just feel like the compassion to yourself. And then yes, you have, yeah, you grow up and you met people. I just feel like this is all the dramas in the you know, but then underneath, I just feel like it's a really consistent power. I don't know what it is. It's just either support you or something always bring you back, you know. And then and I do not know compassion that well, actually. This is actually my key motivation. What is love, you know, in the very first beginning. And then after a while, I figure out, oh, what is compassion? And then I don't know, I just feel like you, thank you for your self-love. I don't know what it is, how do I describe it? I feel like it's the up and downs about the practice, you know, myself has the tendency to idealize things, to put a color, you know, to idealize this practicing, and then to motivate myself, you know, blah, 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 you know, and but there's actually nothing fantasy about this, right? And then thank you for just plainly talk about what it is, right? It's, yes, you become a robot in a certain period of time, and then now you come back. I just feel like there's a coming on and on, coming back, and then go out, coming back, go out. It's never ending. It's just the way it is. And then I just so appreciate, you know, you defantasize that. And then I keep telling myself, don't fantasize that, and then just live moment by moment. I felt there's a love to yourself. And then I think that was compassion. Thank you for loving yourself. Thank you.
Mm. Thank you, May. I always love hearing what you have to say. I always think you are just so genuine and from the heart. So thank you. Yes, compassion has to start with yourself. You have to love yourself and value yourself in order to value and love another human being. And sometimes it's hard. I grew up with a lot of criticism, and I am very self-critical and very much a perfectionist. And even in the things that are supposed to be fun, I remember Bonnie giving her story and talking about how after she was divorced, how she was having so much fun. And I think you mentioned, Bonnie, that you started dancing at Cheryl Burke. Mm-hmm. Well, it happens that one of the teachers that used to be at Cheryl Burke started teaching ballroom dancing at the Y. We are so lucky to have him. He is an outstanding teacher. And he's continuing teaching on Zoom. And I'm still taking some private lessons, but, dancing's supposed to be fun, right? You're just moving with the music and being, even there, I'm wanting to be a perfectionist. If I don't get the steps right, if I don't start on the one of the beat. So, we have to remember in everything we do that we bring our practice with us, and it's crazy not to be able to enjoy dancing. It's supposed to be fun, but sometimes our critical mind takes over and we don't have so much fun. So I'm learning to love myself, May. Thank you.
Christina?
Okay, hi. I just want to comment that, again, Diane, thank you for the talk. The part where you mentioned how practice, you can listen to different teachers and different lessons, ultimately, it's our own journey. And I'm thinking about, for me, it's I say relatively easy, obviously still challenging to try to be peaceful when we are meditating, we're away from everything. We have this room, we have group of people, we set a time. I mean, it has its challenges, but generally it's easier to be at peaceful. But what I found, it's the most challenging when you are interacting with other people. Now we learn all the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truth and, what is right speech and what is, right intention, all those things. And when you put into practice, I found that is when you think about our own journey, because we had to apply in our own situation. And then we really learn in the process. And also the idea of just, for example, compassion. And at what point is the compassion are you being taken, a point of are you being taken advantage of? Is this really compassion, right? So you have to think about, what is really, it's just not, for me, a straightforward, compassion, just love everybody. It sounds very simple, but it's that's what I want to comment. And I remember one of the Buddhist teacher that I listened to, he say it's the compassion wisdom. And you have to also apply the wisdom part. So you have to be in, I think in many cases when you compassion for yourself, compassion to other people, but when there's a conflict, how did you find that wisdom and to satisfy both? This is what I wanted to comment on, kind of a little bit going over examples of my life, how that's I agree with what you're saying, and how that's how really I think the spiritual practice really is applying in our lives.
Hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Christina. Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that we don't have teachers or we don't study and learn. I think maybe sometimes people take a teaching or they read something and that becomes their truth. I think ultimately whatever you hear from a teacher or whatever you learn has to become your truth. It has to resonate and be true for you. In terms of practicing compassion and not losing yourself or having people take advantage of you, I still love the Serenity Prayer, which came out of AA and Al-Anon. And I don't usually say the God part, but I love the prayer because it says, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it works for me when I have to confront something or think about something. And then I think, be serene, be calm, and look at this with a calm mind and an accepting mind, and then decide. And so it's a nice little mantra that I say from time to time. Thank you, Christina.
Dave and then Jayashree.
Thank you, Diane, for your talk. You talked about the development of your practice over time, and also the fact that you were raised in the Catholic Church and how that impacted the development of your practice. From what I heard you say, I took it that it was both, in one sense, in a sort of a general way, at least, sort of made the soil sort of fertile for the growth of your practice, spirituality, but at the same time, there were some specific, I'm thinking of perhaps your conversation with the priest where you were trying to shed some things that you had grown up with, some of the theological or dogmatic aspects of the church. Mm. What I'm wondering is, when you look at your feelings about the relationship between growing up Catholic and then practicing Zen, do you think that your feelings about that relationship has changed over time? Like when you were young, did you feel more rebellious against the Catholic Church, and now do you more recognize the cross, or has that stayed pretty much the same throughout your life?
Thank you, Dave. I really don't have much use for the institutional Catholic Church. Any institution, I'm sure there are some Buddhist churches that have all the usual institutional things that make institutions go wrong. I mean, obviously there's been a lot of abuse in the church. There is a lot of corruption in terms of money and wealth. In any group, I think there are good people who do good work. If there's a wedding or a funeral and it involves a Catholic ritual, I do participate in it. And I've even gone to communion. And my sister, who no longer goes to church and has not much use for the church, she kind of looks at me and says, how can you do that? How can you go to communion when you don't even believe this? But what I feel is we are a group of people who have come together and we're sharing a meal or a banquet. We're sharing together in this celebration, whether it be a wedding or we're remembering someone's life. So I don't feel at all hypocritical about being there and doing that. And I'm grateful for having grown up with a formal religion, because I think for people who do not, it's almost like you have nothing to spring off of, nothing to reject or accept. For example, my sister never had her sons baptized, had never had any kind of formal religious practice with them. And I think in a way that spiritual element is missing from their lives. They're very, very wonderful people. Both of my nephews are artists and they express themselves fully through their art, and they are kind and good people. But I think we all need some kind of spiritual practice, and it's not necessarily what we might define, but anyway, I don't know if I'm answering your question. I'm kind of digressing a bit, but I'm grateful for my Catholic background for that reason.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jayashree?
Hi, Diane.
Hi, okay, yeah.
Thank you so much for your talk. And I guess it's really made me think. You know, when I first came to Kanjo several years ago, you were the first one that made me think about how I was washing dishes and how to do it in a way that was, you know, there, just mindful and putting the practice to work while washing dishes. So I was really puzzled. So I guess, you know, and I know you were nervous about this talk, you had mentioned that. And all these years that I've observed you, when I think of how the kitchen is arranged, and I think of all the care that has gone into so many things, I guess I just am surprised when you say that I didn't take the plunge, because it makes me wonder, what does that mean? And what is the role of different Sangha members? I mean, are we all, when I think of Buddha's Sangha, everybody had different roles. Everybody did different things. And why are we judging ourselves or each other in terms of what we do? Because from the very beginning, I can remember the first Sangha meeting, and there were chairs that had to be, you know, we needed extra chairs. I remember that so well. And you were on top of it. You knew exactly what chairs we needed. I mean, we wouldn't have chairs to sit on in the Sangha. You know what I'm saying? So I guess when you speak and when you say these things, I wonder about it. Makes me wonder in terms of what do we mean when we are a Sangha and what role each of us plays. And we all bring different things, and each one, and nobody's perfect. I mean, you talk about, you know, having this drive for perfection and so forth. Well, we all have our, whatever it is, you know, other face, our small-mindedness about ourselves. And I know I've said this to you before in private too, that I know I've learned so much just in your presence. And, you know, just, I guess, so I guess to me, you've always been a role model in different ways. And each one of us is a role model to each other in different ways. And you have been that for me. I wouldn't know how to wash dishes my kitchen is so much better because of you. So I guess, you know, my question to you then would be what is your idea of you know, being that perfect Sangha member? Because to me, you are that. So that's my question.
Thank you, Jaya. You made me cry. Very sweet, very kind. I think it's true. The Sangha is made up of many different people with many different gifts and talents and abilities. And we all contribute in our own unique, special way. But I have to say that sometimes in the kitchen, I'm really controlling and I really get annoyed at people who wash the dishes with food still on it, you know, and I have such anger and resentment around that. And that bothers me that, you know, this isn't appropriate to be angry about such a silly thing. But I find myself not thinking very kindly about people who don't do it like I do it. It's like, it's this is the right way and everybody should be doing it this way. And I suppose if we were in a monastery, there would be such prescribed ways of doing things in terms of, it's sort of the way Paula was describing her experience in Japan with the nuns. You know, this is the way we do it. This is where we put our towel. This is the way we clean the table. I mean, it's very rigid. I realize that. But there's something to be said for having a prescribed way of doing things. And the fact that I get angry or annoyed or have negative feelings about the people who don't do it my way, that's not correct. So it's that kind of thing. It's the rigidity. It's the perfectionism that is not good inside of me. It doesn't create good feelings inside of me. So it's the attitude. It's the spirit of it, I think, that I would say.
Can I just respond to that and say that I'm glad you're that way, because I would be very sloppy if you weren't that way. You are like, you know how she described how the nuns put the towel underneath because that was the way it went? Well, I know how you get. And because of that, I'm much more particular about it. So in a way, your rigidity or whatever it is that you describe yourself is a good thing for us, for me. You see, so it works. And I know you have work to do on yourself. But in a way, that's how the Sangha works, is that your imperfections help me or help others. So I guess I would go back to my original comment and I'd say I disagree with you.
Thank you.
Anyhow, I'll let somebody else ask a question.
Well, but Jaya, you are a fantastic creative cook and a good cook who's creating in the kitchen. You have to make methods to be creative. You're an artist in the kitchen, so that's your gift.
Umar, sorry.
Hi, Umar.
Just wanted to say that because of you, you know, I have started to look at things in a much I look at things in a much more aesthetic light now, because you have such a high standard of how everything should be placed and how everything should be done. And although you call it control, the way that I have been interpreting it all along has been that you care so much for everyone, where everything is supposed to go, because without order, there'd be complete disorder. And with disorder, we would not be able to run Canando. I mean, without order, we wouldn't be able to run Canando, and there'll be complete chaos. So you do, you know, you are one of those people who's holding our world together. And I just wanted to say to you, thank you for being a part of our life.
How sweet. Thank you, Umar. Thank you so much. That was very kind.
Giuseppe?
Hi, Giuseppe.
Hi, Diane. Hi. Very nice seeing you. I want to send you a lot of love from Italy.
Grazie, grazie.
You are... You came visit me here, so you're also a Buddhist missionary. Together with John Sullivan, and Jean-Yves also came over. I saw your picture with Jean-Yves and the very young Les Kay at Canando College Avenue. Probably was 25 years ago or something. When I was at Jean-Yves' place 2 weeks ago, and it was amazing to see that I immediately recognized you in the group. There were many other people in this group picture of Canon Do in the 90s. And I started asking Jean-Yves, oh, who is that person? And who is that person? And I knew you and Les and another one, but like, it's very comforting, I think, for me, I think probably for everybody, to see how you stayed with the practice and you've been supportive to Les and to Canon Do for so long time. And I've learned something from this talk. I've learned that you've described much better than I ever could some of the feelings reciting regularly our chants. Mm. You've described I also hit the head on our bell on the Ngawa sweeping. So we have a lot of common experiences. And the non-verbal part of our practice is so important. And so I think it's so important to have maybe people that are better versed for speaking regularly and others that speak every 20 years. So it's amazing. I just wanted to say that this is thank you for being you're an example of the practice that goes a long time and changes slowly the way we perceive us. So I'm sorry, but I don't have a question for you. I wanted to say ciao ciao.
Ciao ciao. Thank you, Giuseppe. I probably wouldn't have an answer either. In fact, I kind of have a question for you, since you grew up in Italy. You must have, I would assume, been a baptized Catholic. And maybe you remember some of the rituals of the church, and I wonder from you whether the rituals you grew up with and the rituals that we practice now resonate for you in the way they do for me.
Yes, actually, also that part of your talk is very close to me. Look at my name, Giuseppe Maria. It's like the father and mother of Jesus. So I definitely am a baptized Catholic. And I grew up, and my story is very similar to yours. I had strong feelings for the religious ceremonies. When I was very young, you know, when you are six, when you get the communion. And so it is something for a small child. And just like you, when I was a little bit older and teenager, I challenged the beliefs that were just given. So a very similar story to you, and also very similar sensibility. I do appreciate any religious practice a bit, because I think that is the spirit. The spirit is good, and I'm not shy about joining a religious practice that is different, because I do it respectfully, and I know that the feeling is the same, and I also, you know, tend to stay outside of the church if there are some rites, but sometimes I join the whole group of people and go in, and yes, like at my father's funeral, you know, in other cases, so it's and I've been in a mosque, and I've been doing foot prostration, like so it's I think I share same feeling about that with you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Vanessa?
I love listening to your talk, Diane.
Thank you.
Really, the way that you put it together, the images, you know, the images that you invoked from your life, I found it really touching. And I appreciate, as I always do, I think your directness and your honesty. You know, there's always a lot of things we can talk about pretty much almost anything, but there's a lot of things that we'd rather just sweep under the rug. There's a lot of things we'd rather not address. And it's very helpful when we do, and when these things are brought up, and it's helpful, and it's supportive, and that's how I feel in regards to you. I feel supported, you know, always, personally, like one to one. I feel supported by you, and I feel supported by you, as I think lots of people have expressed tonight. In the Sangha. I also, like Jayashree, have a memory of doing dishes together with you once. let's not overemphasize these characterizations, but I just remember feeling how much there was to learn, and it wasn't about doing dishes. You know, like I asked you something about what product I should use to clean something. I can't remember because I didn't know, but there was so much more there in your answer and in our interaction then, and I think generally I really appreciate that. It's a relief to have somebody who you know is supporting you, and who's supporting everybody, and who you know will always be direct and will always be honest. So thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa. I think you're a person that likes to clean too. Look at our beautiful Ngawa and how you power washed it. And I have that picture of you squeezing yourself in front of the kitchen window. Cleaning off the stucco.
I think that's just more a love of power machines than it is of cleaning, but I'll take it.
Okay. Thank you. you've enriched the Sangha, you've enriched our practice with your love of literature, your beautiful writing, and I love reading you, the newsletter, and also your Dewdrop. I think it's wonderful. So please keep coming back.
Craig.
Thank you so much. I also loved your talk, and you definitely shouldn't do yourself down in terms of the quality and experience of being in the receiving, and it was also very moving. I will skip the washing up stories. I think we've been there. And the one thing I'll say that comes to mind when I hear you, you know, being quite critical of yourself, or talking about being critical of yourself, I'm going to flip the Suzuki Roshi thing around and say, even if you could use a little improvement here and there, you are already perfect exactly the way you are, just the way you are. And I think the way that everybody has talked about you this evening and has so much love and appreciation for everything you do, taking a moment to remember that side of the equation, I think would be great. So thank you as well.
Thank you, Craig. That was very sweet. Yeah, it's important we accept ourselves as we are. And sometimes it's hard. So thank you for that reminder. If I could just chant like you.
Since that video was shared on WhatsApp, I feel I've got to up my game.
Which are me?
The video on WhatsApp with the monk with the deck and the sun. Oh, and
yeah. I don't know who put that up. Who put that up there?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Any last questions or comments before we close out? May, go ahead.
I think I really want to add the, want to join the WhatsApp thing. Oh,
sure.
Yeah, just I can provide my phone number, because I sort of like disengage with social media for a while. Because I work there, I want to maintain some sanity. So, but now I feel like I'm gradually coming back with sanity. So love to join the WhatsApp.
Oh, you work for WhatsApp?
I on board a long time ago, but I never used that. Yeah. So right now I'm at a clean slate.
Got it. Yeah. So I can add you, May. You can just email me your phone number or anything. That's fine. Or chat it to me, whatever you want. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? So I just have to add, because we're on this sharing stories of Diane. So for me, it was that we were walking on the dirty Angawa, and she made all of us clean our feet. And that was great. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was, we became mindful of tracking dirt into the kitchen, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then we learned how to clean the floor with a wet towel and rubbing our feet around. It was, I've always had a good time with you in the kitchen, Diane. So,
Bonnie, do you remember the time that we both saw that muddy splotch in the Zendo?
Oh, God. Yes. We were horrified. It was the middle of the
day. It was after work period. And I think somebody walked in there with dirty feet after the floor was washed.
And it just turned to mud. It was horrible.
And we both noticed it.
Yeah, we were just cleaning. We're just like, yeah, I remember. Yeah. Good story. Great. Well, thank you so much for your talk, Diane. It was very courageous, very heartfelt, and it's good to hear you more than every 20 years if we can. Does anyone have any announcements
Teresa.
Yeah, Les will be our guest speaker next week. Well, not the guest speaker, sorry, our speaker next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Les, do you have anything you want to say about next week, or should we just show up and see what happens?
Yes, please just show up.
Okay.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.